You're listening to the Addicted to Fitness podcast, brought to you by Elemental Training Tampa. Now, here's your hosts, Nick and Shannon Birch.
Thank you for stopping by and checking out this week's Addicted to Fitness podcast. We really appreciate you guys listening. The lips and numbers continue to go up each week. October was our best month so far. And we really appreciate you guys listening and sharing the podcast with a friend. Also, if you get a second, we'd really appreciate you head to the iTunes store and give us a rating and review. All right. Now, into the health and fitness portion of this podcast, I'm going to throw it over to my co-host to let you know what topics we're going to talk about today.
We're going to be talking about a little thing called Swerve. And no, it is not a raging new dance move. It is actually a food item. Then, apparently, Nick has some secret discussion topic he's going to spring on me. So, let's just wait and see what that might be.
Mm-hmm. We actually had this conversation few weeks ago, but I thought it was a good topic to kind of talk about on the podcast. I've been trying to find the opportunity to bring it into the podcast.
Just bring it on me.
Yeah, exactly. But before we get into those topics, we're going to talk about the ETT training for this week. We had a big week in ETT training. One of my longest tenured clients and former co-host of the old version of the podcast, which you guys heard last week, Tyler had his final training session this week. And he completed his training package, but he's not going to renew with us because he and his wife are pregnant.
So congratulations! They're preparing for the impending life change.
Yes, yes. They're getting ready with all the things that are involved with that. So he's taking a little break. I'm sure he'll be involved with ETT from us moving forward, but I know, pregnancy is a big life event that you have to prepare for. So
it's kind of huge.
Proper preparation is important for successful pregnancies, which I'm sure they will have, and we're looking forward to welcoming a new ETT baby into the community.
It's gonna be a little while before you start training it.
Yeah, I know. It might take a little while, but. What also we did for ETT this week is that one of our celebrity client, Carmen, was trained at my old kickboxing gym, Amir's Academy. Amir welcomed her and I into the gym this week for her to prepare for her upcoming boxing competition. It was like a blast from the past. Like, it was kind of going back in the time machine, back to when I used to train there and do for fights and everything. We did a 30-minute ab conditioning interval training before we did the sparring. So it was like the good old days, essentially.
Yeah.
We were doing a ton of body conditioning, like I said, ab conditioning. And then we got in the ring and Carmen sparred 2-minute rounds with a fighter that had been there, I know, for a long time.
Yeah, I saw the video, and I mean, she was holding her own against someone who had a significant more amount of training.
Yes, exactly. That was the thing. The woman that she sparred had been there for years. I think she's one of the instructors that Amir uses. So she's definitely skilled, and she held her own. Carmen held her own and had some good techniques and some techniques we need to work on. So
yeah.
She's more than ready, I think, for her competition. That's going to be November 12th at LBC in Palm Harbor. So this is a little bit more local for the people who are interested in coming out and see Carmen. That'll be at a brew pub kind of thing, but they used a whole parking lot for events. So that's going to be the Mike Calta Punch Out is going to be November 12th at LBC in Palm Harbor. So we're looking forward to Carmen putting on a good performance there.
I think she always is the most impressive fight of the night, to be honest.
Yeah,
she's more trained than probably most of the other fighters.
Right, and I told her what she went through this week at Amir's is going to be way more tougher than what she's going to have on November 12th. You know, just the amount of skill against the fighter she fought this past week doesn't compare to the girl that she'll be competing against on the 12th. No, nothing against her opponent. Yeah, it's just, it would be impossible to, you know, compare. And I know she's training with some really skilled fighters, and she's probably going up against some experienced fighters, too.
They might be the fight of the night. If the other fights are like last year's, which involved giant punching gloves, you know, like the really big size of your, like, size of a beach ball type gloves, man in a thong, some, like, I don't know, were they... Some women.
Yes. That's a good way of putting it.
Of interesting backgrounds.
Yeah, one was a former bodybuilder.
One was not. She might have been able to, like, beat down the Jersey Shore kind of thing.
Yes.
And then the other looked like she really belonged on a float.
Yes, yeah.
Lots of sparkles and feathers.
It was quite the mismatch, unfortunately.
Yeah. But the one in the guys with the thong, that one was definitely the most memorable and scarring.
Yeah.
And it was kind of a joke.
But yes, I'm looking forward to that. Carmen's training real hard for that. So we got a couple more training sessions before the event. And anybody who lives in the Tampa Bay area who wants to come out, it's November 12th at LBC in Palm Harbor.
Yep.
So come on out and check it out. All right, so... Training for this week, what did you get into? I was at Amir's going back and, you know, reliving some glory days and getting punched in the head. And what did you do for training this week?
I was flipping out.
Uh-oh.
Oh!
Puns?
I wasn't, like, figuratively flipping out. I was actually flipping out because I went back to my aerial yoga for some swing yoga. And I haven't been there. I actually looked back to count how long it's been. I took the workshop for this class because, like, you have to be taught how to do this aerial type of yoga where you're in like a silk swing almost. Mm-hmm. And I took that class 5 months ago. I haven't been back since. Just because life got away from me and for some reason just things didn't align. And I didn't go back. And I went back for the first time this week. And it was pretty awesome. I did some flips. Like, you flip over backwards. You can flip over forwards. You flip on the side. I mean, like, there's all these things. It was basically just playing. But, oh my gosh, my arms were so sore. They were so tired afterwards. Because if you're curious as to what the challenge is about... aerial yoga, it's a lot of upper body. It's definitely not for someone who has no upper body strength, because you're gonna struggle. But I mean, I guess you could build upper body strength. I have moderate upper body strength right now. I'm working on building it up, but the girl beside me was a former, like, she used to rock climb as her exercise, and she gave up rock climbing to do aerial yoga. And she had amazing upper body strength. So she could do all kinds of crazy stuff. And she was really helpful teaching me all the tricks. So that was pretty freaking awesome to go back and do. And I will also add, I've had 2 solid weeks of 6 training sessions, which is kind of historical for me. I haven't done that in years. And I feel good. Like, I'm not burned out. I'm not exhausted. I've taken my rest days kind of strategically, and I feel really good.
That's good. I'm glad that you're, like I said, you're not burning yourself out.
Yep.
So this is therapeutic to you, both physically and mentally.
Yep.
So that's important.
It is.
I'm glad you're back on the a good exercise or a regular exercise regimen your preferred one. All right, so now we're going to get into our Swerve discussion. So like Shannon mentioned earlier, Swerve is a sugar alternative. It's actually made out of sugar alcohol. The actual term is... What's it made of? I'm pointing to you.
You didn't write it anywhere here.
Yeah, but you know it. Erythritol.
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 I was looking for the notes, and I'm like, oh no, I just blanked.
I was going for you for proper pronunciation.
Oh. Erythritol.
Is it erythritol? It starts with an E.
Erythritol. E, yeah.
Erythritol.
Erythritol.
Oh. Okay. So it's a sugar alcohol. It's created from fruits and vegetables, but it has no, according to especially the product we use, it has no, you know, sugar content.
Yeah, it's made from fermented sugars and fruits.
Oh, okay.
That's what it is.
Oh, okay.
And that's why it's a little different than some other sugar alcohols, right? Because there are other types of sugar alcohols.
Uh-huh.
But erythritol is specifically from fermented sugars in fruits and vegetables.
Okay.
And it doesn't impact your body, basically. So your body doesn't treat it like a sugar.
Right.
So typically you consume regular old sugar, whether it's honey, whether it's refined, your body has an impact.
Right.
You know, I mean, it can range depending on the type of sugar, and things like honey and maple syrup and things might not have quite the large impact that a refined white sugar would, but it causes a spike in your blood sugar levels.
Right.
And your body reacts.
Yeah,
however, this one, erythritol, doesn't really interact
right.
at all with your body. Your body just kind of lets it be passed through, and it doesn't cause those spikes.
Right. According to their website, there's some data on their website for the Swerve website, which is this swervesweetener.com, I believe.
Swerve.
And they, like Shannon mentioned, there's no, according to the studies they've done or the experiments they've done, there's no a dramatic rise in the blood sugar once it's consumed. And in, I guess, kind of in conjunction, there's no insulin response.
Yep.
Usually when blood sugar spikes, your body produces insulin to cover that blood sugar.
Mm-hmm.
So when there's no blood sugar spike, there's no insulin response. A few weeks ago, I actually put it out on Twitter asking, you know, other people that I kind of interact with on Twitter, a couple that have been on the podcast, Nicole Racine, Vinny Tortorich, asking if this product was too good to be true. You know, because they claim is basically it's all the beneficial thing. Well, not beneficial, but
with
all the good
flavor.
Stuff. Yeah, all the good stuff of sugar without the negative side effects.
Right.
You know, which, and usually if something's too good to be true, it usually is. It's
yes.
kind of the same. So I got some good feedback from different people. Anna Vocina, another former guest on the podcast, she said she's hasn't had any stomach distress with it when she's used it, but she doesn't use it often. Some other people echoed the same thing, which is kind of apparently is common with other sugar alcohols.
Yeah.
Is that there's some gastric distress that's associated with them, but apparently with the erythritol, there aren't any, or there isn't any.
Does gastric distress mean you get the toots?
Yes. You get, maybe some toots and diarrhea, or some also ones.
So some toots and some runs.
Yeah. Thank you for breaking that down a little bit more
simplistically.
Well, you're
just being so delicate on the
yes.
gastric distress.
Yes.
Us. Let's just get real here.
So no toots and runs, apparently, according to Shannon. But then, you know, some of the other people were like, you know, they don't really truly subscribe to the fact that, you know, there's no negative side effects. So I think this product, I mean, even though it's been around for a long time, I mean, the research I did on it, it was discovered in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what they're worried about, the people that kind of maybe the naysayers that responded to me on Twitter, is that it's still allowing people to kind of somewhat have a sugar addiction. You know, get that sweet hit, even though I've found is that if you try to cut down on your sweet intake or whatever, you know, your artificial sweet intake, you kind of, you lose that sugar addiction. You don't crave it as much.
Yeah, well, they have proven sugar is addictive. It just is. It's like a drug. It causes the same sort of dependency that causes you to consistently want it in your diet. So we've talked previously about how we've drastically cut back on the amount of sugar, added sugar, I should
mm-hmm.
say, because please, people, just go and look at your labels for like a week and calculate the sugar that you actually consume. Sugar's in everything. Like, you don't have to add sugar to your diet. It's already in most of your food. It's going to freak the crap out of you, really. But taking all of that added sugar, so like the baked goods and all of those, you know, your morning coffee and your drinks in the middle of the afternoon, those are like kind of added sugars that you might put in your diet, kind of just saying, well, I'd love a little juice or something. Well, you don't really need more juice because you're already consuming a ridiculous amount of sugar. So right. We've scaled back. We drastically scaled back. I think when did we do that? It was like basically earlier this year, we really tried to focus on cutting back on our sugar. And now, both of us, we don't put sugar in our coffee. We maybe have like one little sweet kind of thing a day, but not much. Mm-hmm. And I would say for the most part, we don't drink sweet drinks. You know, we don't do juices. Occasionally, we'll do a cocktail.
Yeah.
But that's really it. So added sugar, we are very relatively low on.
Yeah, we usually, when we go out and treat ourselves, we might have you know, dessert or a cocktail, like you said. But when we're here at home, it's, you know, now with the treats, especially this time of year, you love baking seasonal like treats.
Well, I love baking pretty much all year round, but I am not a fan of adding a lot of extra sugar. Like, I'm never gonna be a lot of the people I think you got feedback from, which is great, were people that just do not allow any added sugar in their diets. Mm-hmm. Like, they are anti-sugar all the way, and great for them. Right. I will never be that person unless I have to for my life.
Right.
I do still enjoy food, and I still enjoy some occasional sugar. And I do think this time of year, especially, you tend to find more opportunities to consume sugar with all those seasonal things that we love. But the challenge has been, kind of over the last couple months, I've really taken on trying to bake with as little sugar as possible.
Right.
And with as little gluten as possible when I can too. And because of that, we stumbled across this Swerve product, which you're not seeing it, but every time I say Swerve, I do a little hip circle because it's just fun. So you're missing that, I'm just letting you know. But when we kind of found Swerve, which is available at our local grocery store, Publix, available at Whole Foods. So it's not like it's hidden. I looked into it too, and I was curious because you use it for a one-for-one replacement for sugar. If you guys out there have looked for sugar replacements, you've probably run across Stevia, Trevia, you know, the various kinds of syrups and things like that, but those other alternatives, they have like a different ratio. It's not a one-to-one ratio. So when your recipe that you're baking, for example, let's say it calls for a cup of sugar, it's your grandma's family recipe for cookies, you can't replace it with a cup of Stevia, or dear goodness, you would die. Like, it would be so gross. I can't even imagine. I'm not a huge Stevia fan because I also don't like the aftertaste. Yeah, it has like a distinct aftertaste to it. So that's why I was really interested. Swerve was a one-to-one, meaning for baking and things like that, you can use it as a complete replacement.
Right, you don't have to adjust the recipe.
But it also is, and I'm trying to remember what the word is, it basically, you can use it like sugar in the sense you can put it in a pan and caramelize it.
Oh.
You can, like, it's heat resistant. So if you put Stevia on something, it just disappears. You can't use it in a granular form. You can really only blend it in with something. you can actually use this swerve as like a granular sugar.
Right.
You could put it on top of like a creme brulee and then like burn the top. So, and it doesn't have an aftertaste, which is the other thing I really liked about it.
Right.
So I still use significantly less than most baking recipes or any recipes I find, but it's relatively unnoticeable that it's different from sugar. But the fact that it's not causing a blood sugar insulin reaction, in my mind, for how much sugar I actually do consume, that's a really big pro.
Yeah. And I think they need to do further research, obviously, because I think of the study they cited on their website, I only think it was 15 participants. So, I mean, I think it needs to get a little bit bigger kind of sample group. I think that'll definitely help back their give them more data to support their claims about, you know, no insulin or blood sugar spike. I think that's kind of the main thing. One of the main things the naysayers that reacted to my post were worried about was that it's even though it's, you know, it the data kind of proves their point, so they need to see if other kind of research needs to be done by maybe an independent group to see if this. And plus, another thing that they say, what the swerve says, is that your body can't digest it. Is that it's essentially there only to taste sweet. It has no other value to your body whatsoever.
Like it's like a food coloring or something like yes. that. You know, it's just meant to be a component. It's not going to provide nutritional value for you in a good or bad, well, hopefully bad way. It's right. just going to go straight on through you.
Right. You know, I think that there's some concern with that aspect of it, that essentially it's just there for you to get your sweet fix, which I think that's kind of what some people are worried about. They're like you said, they're more purists. They're no sugar really at all. They see no benefit to sugar at all. And we're not quite there yet. I don't know if we'll ever be there. I know you probably will never be there. I don't think I'll ever be there. Because
I will just throw an apple at someone. If someone says no sugar, I'm just going to throw an apple at them.
Well, I mean, obviously, natural sweeteners in like fructose in fruit is different anyways. Because, you know, that sugar molecule is wrapped with fiber and then has all the phytochemicals, the beneficial phytochemicals within a fruit. So it's different than sugar. They're talking about, like you said, added sugar. It's yeah. different than natural sugars like in fruit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because fruit has beneficial aspects.
Right.
The only beneficial thing about erythritol is that it tastes sweet.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
So, and I think they're worried about the vector. Because you made pumpkin pie with it. I swear, I would fight a child for pumpkin pie.
Well, I also changed that recipe. It was using a new crust that I think is magical. And I also changed the recipe a little bit. So I cut back drastically on the sugar in that recipe, which is one of the reasons I think we liked it so much. And the fact that it had swerve in it, it was only like half a cup for an entire pie. But I mean, I've tried, like I used it, swerve, as just like a little dusting of sugar and like cinnamon sugar mm-hmm. on a cookie recently. I did not love those cookies any more or less than I've loved any other cookie. I thought they were good, but just in straight form, I just think I nailed
earmuffs.
Pumpkin spice.
Did you just say the F word?
Yes, I did. You can bleep it out if you want, but that pumpkin pie was amazing, and I think it was because of the recipe.
I have to bleep you out. How dare you curse on this podcast?
I have definitely cursed before.
Yeah, but you never, I don't think you, no, never mind.
Let's move on.
Let's move on. All right.
I'm sorry if I offended anybody.
But yes, guys, I would say, I guess if you compare it to, you know, white sugar you buy at the grocery store, I would say it's better.
Okay, here's one thing I will say about this. I read like where this product came from, they created it as part of a drink. It was supposed to be part of a drink that was going to be like, they could market it as a no sugar drink, right? They found out it tasted really good on its own, and that's where Swerve came from. Like, that's, they decided we could just market this as a regular product. The core group of people that is their clientele right now are nutritionists and very health-minded people that are looking for a non-impactful sugar substitute. So right now, it's not mainstream. It's not right. really being marketed as a no-sugar product. It is a sugar alternative. They're hoping at some point to end up in food as like an ingredient that could then be marketed as a no sugar food. Mm-hmm. However, as if you are a person who is cutting back on your sugar, your straight sugar in your diet, you're already consuming less and are just looking for a substitute in those few things that you do make that do require sugar, it is plausibly a good substitute.
Yeah.
And I think that much we can say.
From what the data we've seen, you know, this research they've shown us, the Swerve company, it looks good. I think it needs further research.
Well, like you said, the erythritol has been around for a while. So this is not a brand new thing.
No, it hasn't. It's just a new product. No, you're right. It is not a new thing. So I agree, and I think it's just the idea that sugar addiction is a huge issue in this country.
Yeah.
And
I'm sure with anything, if you abuse this, if you consumed a great deal of it, I'm going to confidently say something negative would right. probably happen.
Yeah, I think you still have the mental. There's still the mental addiction of sugar will be there if you just use this to replace the sugar, the ton of sugar you already eat on a daily basis.
Yeah, I don't think that's the argument I would go near. I would definitely say this is a sugar alternative.
Right.
And you should be consuming as little of any kind of added sugar in your diet as possible.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you want to give yourself a treat, which is important, I think everybody should have a treat, you know, still.
Whatever kind of treat that might be.
Yes, I think you can use this to replace the sugar in that recipe, that treat recipe.
Going into the holidays, folks, I don't know about you, but I got some cookies to bake.
Yeah, so I think that's a good alternative. Like you said, it's a good alternative, but you need to start working on bringing down your amount of added sugar you have in your diet, period, before you worry about just, you know, throwing this in your diet.
Yep.
All right, so now we're going to the improv topic.
He's just taking the like the little outline away from me.
Yes.
And I can't see anything.
So, as I mentioned in the beginning, we had this conversation, I think, last weekend. We were sitting here, I was watching something on Netflix, and you were sitting here watching it with me. It was one of my favorite shows on Netflix, Meat Eater.
Yeah.
It just came on Netflix recently. It's,
Does it have to do with you wanting to see a moose in real life?
Well, kind of. this is basically, the topic really is wild game and hunting. Is the topic I want to discuss. Because we had a good conversation about it.
Yep.
You were asking questions. We were watching the hunting show, Meat Eater. And, I mean, it's much more than a hunting show. It's really kind of like a exploration show where hunting is usually a
objective.
Is a prime objective of the show. Yes.
Yeah.
But like unlike a lot of hunting shows, which, you know, I grew up watching, that they don't always succeed,
mm-hmm.
which is a good thing because, you know, hunting, you don't always succeed. I think a lot of people have the misconception that, you know, every time you go out hunting, you're going to come back with an animal. But that is actually the exact opposite of what happens. You know, depending on your situation and what we were watching on that show, where they do what they call fair chase hunting or persistence hunting, where they spot and stalk an animal in huge tracts of land. They were in Alaska, and they were on, you know, a preserve that's
literally in the middle of nowhere.
Yes. I mean, they had to get dropped off by a seaplane. And then luckily, hopefully, if the weather's not too bad, they would get picked up a week later. You know, they're sleeping in the camp, surviving on what food they brought or what food they could, procure, yeah. You know, on the site. So I wanted to talk about hunting and wild game. First thing I was going to talk about was the nutritional value of wild game. It's actually overall has a lot of more beneficial qualities than domesticated or kind of the livestock, the meat sources we have in the United States.
Well, yeah, because it's going to be probably antibiotic free. It's going to be lower in fat. It's going to be eating whole foods and mm-hmm. things, so it's going to be more nutritionally balanced than an animal that's being fed feed.
You're right. I mean, their omega-3 and omega-6 ratio is much better than domestic meat sources because, like you just mentioned, they eat wild sources, essentially wild fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm. So their omega-3 is much higher than their omega-6, which is good because omega-6 usually has a lot of pro-inflammatory aspects to it. So usually if you have a meat that has higher omega-6s, they can be somewhat...
they can encourage inflammation.
Yes, exactly.
In your stomach and body.
Yes. And also has a lot of essential nutrients that are high in iron and zinc. And one example, a 3-ounce serving of venison has 22 grams of protein, while a 3-ounce serving of bison has 24 grams of protein. So it has a high protein content compared to some of the domestic, meat sources, cattle, pigs, things like that we have in this country. So nutritionally speaking, it has better nutrition profile than domestic animals or domestic livestock, I should say. The historical aspect of it is that, we were developing in our early stages, we were hunter and gatherers.
Yes, indeed.
But then when agriculture provided a much more steady food source than hunter and gatherers.
Right.
So the percentage of people that are hunter and gatherers has slowly dwindled over the years.
Well, also the places to hunt have dwindled.
Yes.
With more things have been developed.
Right. Yes, that's true.
So I know that, like, I have family members up north because I, too, grew up in a family of hunters. My father, my uncles, they all were pretty big hunters. Mm-hmm. My dad used to bring me to the shooting range. He had a bunch of buddies. They would go hunting. I didn't get it because I grew up basically a tree hugger. And I grew up with the supermarket, and that was my source of food where I didn't have to kill an animal. So right. I understood hunting, and like I didn't get mad at my dad or any of my family when they went hunting, but like they were going hunting on somebody's land.
Right.
Like people that owned acres and acres and acres of land. They just had that. So they would give an open invitation and people would go hunting. I think a lot of those same places have since been sold off to either developers or something like that, or broken up into parcels of land. Those places that my family went hunting, I don't even think, like, probably half of them are still around.
Right.
Which is sad.
Yeah, I mean, that's a thing. I mean, that's obviously an issue that's been happening. Obviously, as the population goes up, development is more and more regular. But a lot of nature preserves that are, or national parks that are, we see around the United States are really kept open and operated by funds produced by hunters and, mm-hmm. People that buy hunting license and fishing licenses and even ammo. There's a tax attached to all ammo, like firearm ammo that benefits, wildlife preservation.
Hmm.
Let me see here. As of 2012, hunters and target shooters have paid more than $7.2 billion in excise taxes through the Federal Aid in Wildlife Restoration Act since its passage in 1937. So, I mean, hunters and fishers and their fishers? Hunters and fishers? Hunters and fishermen are, you know, they contribute a lot to the preservation of wildlife yes. and wild areas in the United States.
It's good.
I think that's kind of a misconception that people who are hunters are just going out to kill animals and that's all they care about.
Well, you know, it's the prize hunters that I think most people just associate with hunting. Most people who don't hunt, obviously, since hunters are the minority, don't really understand that you're not just going and killing something. Not all hunters just go to kill something to put it on their wall. Like, I still, to this day, hate it when people keep friggin' trophies of what they hunt. I mean, if you ate the whole thing except the head, great. Why do you have to keep a dead head on your wall? Topic for another day. But that's the thing I think most non-hunters yeah. see. Mm-hmm. Because they're not seeing any of the other aspects. They're just seeing the carcass hanging on somebody's wall.
Right. And I think...
gross.
It's interesting. The topic of trophy hunting is interesting. I consider myself, what little hunting I get to do or have done, you know, a meat hunter. That's my main concern, is getting the meat.
I totally get that. Totally respect that.
And I grew up with, you know, hunters that their main goal was to fill the freezer first. So yep. they didn't have to rely on going to the grocery store for protein. Which I think I think that's a noble, you know, cause.
Sure.
You know, you don't want to rely on the domesticated livestock we have in this country. And if you don't want to support that system, you know, we've seen how terrible it can be in documentaries and, you know, feedlots and whatnot.
Yeah, and the fact that there are certain animals that are overpopulated in certain areas, and if you don't kill them, they're going to starve.
Mm-hmm.
Like yep. deer.
Yep, that's a big thing.
In a lot of areas. Like, that's why there's seasons for yes. these things, obviously. But right. totally get that.
Right. But, yeah, it's the trophy hunting terms. I think trophy hunting and plus since we've, you know, we have pets now. You know, I mean, you hear her tip-tapping in the background. That's our dog and the cat's sleeping on the couch next to us.
Yep.
It's... the fact that we have a relationship with animals now that goes on just either being a food source or, you know, as a utilitarian, you know, plowing our field or what like right. or whatnot, you know, we have almost a personal relationship with animals.
Yeah.
And, you know, another thing is the it's a big word and I'm going to try to pronounce it, the anthropomorphic. I'm sorry. We try to put human aspects onto animals.
Oh, yes.
Disney, kind of the Disney aspect, the Bambi, you know, making animals seem like people. My dog is sitting up just like a person or anything yeah. like that, you know.
Which our dog does do.
Yeah. But it's different to have domesticated animals than wild game. Yeah. Trying to equate them to be the same thing, I think, is a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's wild game, they're cute. You know, I get that they're cute. But also, like you mentioned, we need to control them in certain situations, and they're a source of, you know, nutrition.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not talking about hunting animals to extinction. Going to Africa to hunt a trophy animal, that's a whole nother conversation. I'm talking about using wild game as a... you know, food source.
Yep. It's a sustainable, or it's a way to sustain your life. It's mm-hmm. not just the act of hunting for the sake of killing something.
Right. And you and I were talking about it last week, and you kind of, I don't know if you led with this, but you were like, what about hunting appeals to you? You know, you asked yes. me the question.
Yep.
And honestly, the fact that I'm more connected with the food chain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm taking more of an active part in the food chain. You know, I'm not just going to the grocery store, picking up a pack of ground beef and just not even thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going out and planning a hunt and properly, you know, whatever weapon I choose to use, properly practicing with that so I know when I do need to take the shot that I'm ready and that it will be the most efficient, most be accurate shot to prevent any type of suffering. Or you minimize the suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the fact that I'm going out and being connected with nature too.
Yeah. You know, there's a lot of sitting. There's a lot of sitting.
A lot of sitting, a lot of being alone with your own thoughts and thinking about it and just observing and hearing and listening of the sounds of, you know, the woods or whatever environment you're in. There's a lot of beneficial aspects to it that some people just get hung up on the idea of how can you kill an animal.
Yeah.
And to speak to that topic, it's not easy.
Right.
You know, I don't enjoy, I mean, it's hard to say that I don't enjoy hunting because I do enjoy it. The act of killing an animal, I don't relish.
Right.
But I realize it's a means to.
It's necessary.
Yes. It's necessary to participate in hunting.
Right.
And I'm willing to do that. And not everybody's willing to do that.
Right.
You know, and I think that's how it's been historically. I mean, historically, even when we were in our primitive form, there's been hunters and there's been gatherers. There's some people that couldn't go on hunting trips because they couldn't sit still for 3 hours.
Right.
Or they couldn't chase whatever game, you know, because persistent hunting was a big thing. They couldn't chase the game down, you know. There's going to be certain segment of people, that are hunters in a population or in a group, and there's going to be people that won't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I mean, that's... And I think that's just the way human nature is.
Yep.
So I wanted to talk about that. I thought that was a good topic.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, cause every time you go home to visit your family, your goal is to bring back something to stick in our freezer.
Yeah.
Something that I probably won't eat. And it's not that I would never eat any animal that was killed. I personally just don't like the gamey taste.
Right.
Because ever since I was a kid, I have avoided it. And it mm-hmm. is somewhat of an acquired taste.
Yeah.
There are certain animals, I think, like smaller animals, you know, animals that aren't in city areas, that don't taste gamey. They don't, you know, that might be something I would be interested in, like more like poultry, maybe. But it's just not necessarily my cup of tea.
Right. And I think we've also been conditioned a little bit by eating domesticated livestock. We're kind of right. used to that flavor and that taste too. So when we have something that different as wild game, it's a little bit of a shock.
Yeah, there's been times, especially since I didn't eat meat for years, there's been times where you've made something that you brought home.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what it was. Maybe it was deer. And it made me physically ill to smell it.
Mm.
Like, the odor itself made me nauseous. And I have a super sniffer, we know that, but that also is kind of, you know, when you're predisposed not to like meat or not to eat meat. I can't smell chicken either. Raw chicken makes me incredibly nauseous.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that I stopped eating meat for a portion of time probably makes me even more apt to not enjoy gamey meat.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. I know some people swear by like bison and ostrich and all this stuff, and I'm like, ding, go for it.
Well, I can tell you one person that's probably not ever going to eat wild game. And that's the next interview we're going to feature on the Addicted to Fitness podcast.
Yes! Look at that. Good segue.
Mm-hmm. Yes, next week, guys, you will be treated to a interview with the lean, green dad himself, Corey Warren. He is the vegan triathlete we were talking about the last couple episodes. I was able to speak with him this week, and we will feature that interview next week on the podcast, so get ready for that. We have the next ETT group workout set up. It's going to be
on the 12th of November.
One more time.
On the 12th of November.
No. The next ETT group 19th. Workout.
It's on the 19th of November.
Woo!
I've had the 12th in my head for so long because of the job. So say it.
Yes, the next ETT group workout is going to be...
the 19th of November.
Thank you. And we're actually going to do the first one in our own neighborhood here in Seminole Heights. So yes. If you're in the Tampa Bay area and you want to come check out Seminole Heights, probably the most up-and-coming neighborhood in Tampa Bay.
It's considered one of the trendiest, hippest neighborhoods.
Yes, we're going to be having the group workout here on the 19th. Check out the Elemental Training Tampa Facebook page for all the details. Mm-hmm. All right, once again, guys, thank you for listening to the podcast. Keep sharing, keep giving us rating reviews. We really appreciate it. We love giving you guys health and nutrition information on a weekly basis. I think we spoke long enough this week. Yep. You got anything for them?
I'm good.
All right, this has been another edition of the Addicted to Fitness podcast. We'll check you next time.
Bye.
If you want to learn more about Elemental Training Tampa, check us out on Facebook or go to our website, elementaltampa.com. You can also follow us on Instagram and Twitter under the handle ETTampa. Please rate and review the podcast. Your feedback will help us get better. Thanks. All right, 5, 4.
Is it on? Oh, sorry.
Why?
I didn't see
You just made the outtake.
I didn't see